Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
Where are all the gutless American wrestlers? Step in the ring with the Baron and face the brains.
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine is in government issue.
Hello, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me. On this episode, my guest is Rod Price. We talk about world-class Steve Austin, Chris Adams, and much, much more, and that interview is coming up in just a bit. Coming soon here to the Wrestling Nostalgia feed, I will have the September 1988 AWA Deep Dive episode. Plus, I will be debuting another Deep Dive series on Stampede Wrestling in 1988. So if you have any questions about AWA in September of 1988, or Stampede Wrestling in January of 1988, submit those to me on social media to have me respond on the show. On August 26th, we found out from his son that Sid Vicious had passed away. Sid had cancer, and it's really heartbreaking that he's gone before he should be, right? Sid had such an impactful career, and I know... some people don't like Sid. They don't like that style. I love Sid. I always loved Sid. And he was so awesome, right? If you were a fan at that time, when he debuted, when he was getting magazine coverage, and then when he came into the NWA, you couldn't help but be a fan, right? In those early days of the Skyscrapers, Sid had a presence. He had a look, obviously. The size, the physique. He just had it, right? He had that presence about him. And then on up into his run through, WWE with some championship runs and everything. I loved it all. Now, I wasn't a huge fan of the Sid stuff when he went back to WCW in those last years leading up to, his leg break and his injury. But I always loved all his stuff. And I worked a show once with Sid. This was after he broke his leg, and he came in, and he was just doing an enforcer or, manager of the night, a general manager of the night type deal, right? Something to that effect. He wasn't actually wrestling. But he came in, and, he got there, got there pretty early, right? Especially for a name. Sometimes, if you have a name guy on a show, at least back in those days, at least. They kind of roll in. And I'm not saying late, but they would, they wouldn't come in any earlier than they need to prior to the doors opening and stuff, but Sid got there pretty early. And a bunch of us, the local guys that were there all the time on all the shows, primarily, were just there, in the locker room, kind of getting ready, hanging out and whatever else. And Sid came back here to, stake his chair and put his bag down. And, then, all of us sitting around, and he came around one at a time and shook our hands and introduced himself to us like we didn't know who the hell he was. But that's not the point, right? It was that respect. Here was Sid, arguably one of the biggest name talents in wrestling of all time, right? Name value talents. And here we were, a bunch of Midwest nobodies. And Sid sat there the entire night and did everything and talked to us just like we were on the same level as him. Right? No ego whatsoever. No nothing. He just talked and cut up with us like he was there on every one of our shows that we ran there. And like he was just always there in her locker room, man. It was so cool, so fun. And I gained a whole new respect for him that night and the way he acted, the way he treated us. And it was really cool. It was, and I truly always appreciated that. Cause I hadn't done anything to earn Sid Vicious's respect. And, you know, I'm not saying it would give him any right to be rude or disrespectful, but you know, I was a nobody at that time and he didn't, you know, it was just that he took the time to, you know, to talk to us and just, and hang out. And you can just tell he just enjoyed being there. Right. And it was cool. It was fun. I appreciated it. But again, I was always a fan of Sid. I hate to see him gone so long. I really feel for his family, his son, his grandchildren. You know, I really, really, really feel for them. You know, again, Sid Vicious, gone from the world and had a great impact on professional wrestling. As I'm recording this, I had just watched, I watched it live, the MLW Summer of the Beasts show on that they ran on YouTube. And primarily watched it because of the Andersons, CW and Brock Anderson. I'm a fan of the Anderson family, and right, and there's that lineage, that history. And I, you know, not, you know, me, I, you know, I like wrestling history, right? The name of the goddamn podcast is Wrestling Nostalgia. Give me a break. And, and anyway, you know, and I always loved the Andersons, right? All incarnations of the Andersons. Loved Ole, Arn. Gene was before my time, obviously, a little bit, but I've saw, seen plenty of tapes and everything else. But always loved, you know, and I loved CW and what he did through ECW and everything else. And that endorsement and tie he had to the Anderson family. Was really excited when Brock came to AEW. I don't think he was quite ready to be on that platform at that time. But it was kind of, the product of the system and Arn worked there and everything else. Anyway, but I've always been a fan of Brock's, right? Because he's Arn's kid, right? He's Arn's son. Looks like Arn. Good grief. And, you know, he's an Anderson. So I was always a fan. So when recently, you know, CW and Brock have gotten together and teaming as the Andersons, and they've been with Arn quite a bit. Arn's managed them a lot. Arn has given them the endorsement. Arn has, you know, gave them the Anderson boots. If you know, you know. If you don't, look it up, which was very, very cool. And so I'm a huge fan. I like this Andersons, the Andersons thing that they're doing, right? I like that it's out there and it exists. And they were making their MLW debut. And I watched it, and I loved them. I thought they were great. I, you know, enjoyed their part. They felt like Andersons. It felt like an Anderson thing. You know, they come out there with those Minnesota colors, that maroon and gold, and they looked great. It was so cool. And that was the primary reason I watched it. But it was a fun show overall. Lots of good stuff there that I truly enjoyed watching. Donovan Dijak popped up there and, got to see Paul London wrestle after many, many years. Little Guido was on there on the show. Lots of young talent, newer talent. Just some fun stuff on the show. Kenta was on the show. TJP, some CMLL Atlantis Jr. and Mystico was on there. I mean, it was. So there was a lot of good stuff on the show. It was really enjoyable. I would suggest you go out to YouTube, check them out, go to the MLW channel, and look it up. It's called Summer of the Beast. If there's parts you're not hip on, you can scan through. But like I said, I'd highly advise you to watch the Andersons stuff on there. CW and Brock did a great job, and it was pretty cool, right? It felt classic, felt kind of timeless, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. So. All right. So I guess that's everything that's kind of up going on with me and up in the world that I'm in tune with, so to speak. So let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll have that interview with Rod Price. So stick around.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here, curator of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, inviting you guys to listen to many of the programs here as part of the WrestleCopia brand, including, but not limited to, the Wrestling Memory Grenade, currently covering the 1988 and the WWF project. You can also listen to the Regional Wrestling Podcast, where we talk the territories, whether it's Jamie Ward with Georgia 81, Roman Gomez with the UWF in 1986, or Gene Jackson covering Memphis in 85, three projects going on right now over there at Regional Wrestling. You can also listen to The Wrestling Stoop with the legend himself, Bob Roop. Bob goes back in time each and every week, covering not just his career, but countless stories and interactions with hundreds of wrestling names spanning his two decades in the business. But that's not all. You can also check out the Puro Wrestling Academy with the professor of Puro Resu, Mr. Dan Ginnity. Dan and I go back in time and cover the history of Japanese professional wrestling in the English language. And you can listen to all of those shows and more, all part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, located over at WrestleCopia.com. That's WrestleCopia.com, and anywhere your podcast streaming needs are met, from Apple to Spotify, Pocket Cast, and beyond. And while you're at it, why not subscribe to our social media guys for all the latest goings on here at the WrestleCopia Podcast Network. Plus, I'm constantly adding old school video clips and pictures from throughout wrestling history. You can follow us over on X, formerly Twitter, at Wrestling Grenade. That's at R-A-S-S-L-I-N Grenade. Also, follow and like me, Facebook.com/Wrestling Grenade. And why not subscribe to YouTube.com/Wrestling Grenade. So if you're looking to support that next up-and-coming podcast brand, please consider making it WrestleCopia.
This is Listen to Their Screams, a horror podcast that feels like you're chatting with friends. Hello, I am one of your friends, Dave. I am one of the co-hosts of Listen to Their Screams with my friend Ike, and we want you to come and check us out. We are a fun-filled, positive horror movie podcast that does reviews, news, birthdays, anniversaries. We play games. We are a ton of fun every week for you, the horror fan out there. For all of our links to our social media and the podcast platforms, just check out our link tree. It is linktr.ee/listen2screams. That is listen, the number 2, and screams. Or look us up on your favorite social media platform and podcast provider. And welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. This time I'm being joined by the California stud, Rugged Rod Price. Rod, how are you?
I'm doing super, man. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So tell me a little bit. You grew up in California, correct? And played football.
Yes.
Did I see that you played some in the NFL?
Yes. I spent time with a little bit of time with the Rams and on their practice squad. Had a knee injury. Set out a year, and then tried out with the Chargers. Spent some time with them.
Was wrestling always? Were you always a fan of wrestling, a passion of wrestling, or
absolutely? I did both. I don't know what you know about 1980s money in the NFL, but it's not what it is today.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Well, I heard you say, I believe in an interview, that you had family in Indiana as a kid. Is that correct?
That is absolutely. I was actually born in Indiana, and my mom and dad moved to California when I was young.
Really? Where were you born in Indiana?
In Lebanon, Indiana.
All right, I know where that's at. I'm originally from Indiana. Spent most of my life there. So
well, I liked you. You're a Hoosier, man.
That's right. I am. Yeah. And, So did you ever get back to Indiana to visit? Did you ever get to catch any of Dick the Bruiser's WWA?
Yeah, when I was young, you know, I moved to California when I was young. I used to go back and work with my grandpa, my mom's dad, and I used to get to catch the Dick the Bruiser, the Kangaroos, Nick Bockwinkel. Man, I was a huge wrestling fan.
Yeah. Like I said, originally from Indiana. Everybody in Indiana has a Dick the Bruiser story, it seems like.
Absolutely. Even full circle, I ended up working for him.
There you go. Well, all right. Yeah. So, and you were trained by Red Bastien.
Yes.
Right? And yes. Red is always, to me, he's always such an underappreciated name in wrestling. You don't hear him talked about enough. He was a great talent, helped lots of guys with their starts. So what was he like to be around and train with?
Red was just... You know, there's like so many others of the greats, man. Red was the first high flyer of the day.
Yeah.
And those rings, you know, when I was coming up, the rings were rough, especially the Sportatorium. But his day, they had the big old saggy ropes, and it was just the rings were hard as a rock. And he was out there bumping, high flying. You know, he was a pioneer.
Yeah, I mean, and he was involved in wrestling, man, all the way up. I know he was booking some California shows for the AWA way up into the late 80s and everything else. He was
absolutely. He helped me get hooked up when I was out there, and then when things started drying up, he sent me to Dallas.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. You broke in the 80s, which it's a weird time to try to break into wrestling because the territories, like you said, are drying up. The places of work are becoming more and more limited. What's that like? How hard is that to try to make a career, right? Make a living in wrestling in that time?
It was tough, man. I was fortunate. I was really fortunate because James Beard and Larry Dwyer, when I came to Dallas, a redhead phoned ahead for me and said, "Hey, man, I'm sending the guy out there. He's green. He needs your help." And they both took me under my under their wing and helped me. Larry Dwyer, I had my first match with Killer Brooks for Killer Brooks' promotion at the time. And that got me working 2 days a week. I picked up another house show on a Wednesday. Thursday, I had to travel to Oklahoma. I worked for Tom Jones. I mean, I traveled far for little or no money, but, you know, I was hungry for the experience. And I was able to work the Sportatorium Friday and Saturday. Sometimes a spot show Sunday. A lot of times I had Sundays off.
Well, yeah, and like I said, you're working for World Class, that's where you probably really started gaining some attention.
And absolutely. People
started noticing you. And you said Red helped you get in there and whatever else. But what was it like working both for and with the Von Erichs?
At the time, you know, the Von Erichs are royalty in wrestling, especially in Texas. And I had a good for some reason, you know, the Lord just blessed me. Fritz liked me. He liked because I was an athlete. He always liked athletes in wrestling.
Right.
And I was really green to put on TV. So he kept polishing me on house shows. So I worked a lot of house shows for World Class. He sent me to Oklahoma to work around Danny Hodge, not work Danny Hodge, but Danny was helping with some promotions up there. Yeah. And Akbar he took me under his wing too, and made me part of Devastation, if I can say it.
Yeah.
Devastation Incorporated.
There you go.
I got it out.
That's it.
And, yeah. And he helped me get booked. He helped me. I worked in Louisiana for Grizz, just all over. I went in USWA. I worked for Jarrett twice. Did that circuit twice, and they wanted me to do it the third time, and I couldn't do it. But I had leverage because I had James and Sakurada got me in Japan. So.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned earlier that you worked for Dick the Bruiser. When did you work for Dick?
It was late 80s, around 90. He was running. His son was promoting mainly, but Dick was still around in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
I used to fly into Indianapolis every Wednesday.
Yeah.
For 2 years.
Yeah, so obviously wrestled as Leroy Redbone. He ran into some trouble or whatever, but yeah, that's a lot of people don't realize. I mean, you know, a lot of shows moved to Toledo and stuff with Dick, but he died in 91, but he was running shows and appearing all the way up to his death.
He was having health issues, but he was around, and you know, he liked me because, you know, I played football and went into wrestling, you know, and at the time, I was a big beer drinker too, so he loved that.
There you go, it's so odd when you hear guys here nowadays talk about some of the territories, and I hear it about WWE a lot, and I love WWE, right? That's what I grew up on. When you hear they like, oh, you watch this, all these, they use all these old guys. I'm like, you know what? Yeah, they were elderly, maybe, but they were still drawing. Dick the Bruiser drew.
Yeah, my wife's phone. How dare she have somebody call?
Oh. But I like I said, whatever Dick the Bruiser was, I don't care how old he was, I don't care what shape he was in, what, you know, if he wasn't taking any bumps, if Dick the Bruiser was on the card, his name alone was drawing fans in the Midwest.
And like, you know, he was such a staple, especially in Indiana and like you said, the Midwest, man. He was him and the Crusher. I remember them, you know. It brings back a lot of memories, but and I tried not to mark out too much because I was a huge Bruiser and Crusher fan, you know.
Yeah. And every territory though had that guy or those guys, right? That were had been there for a long time and were still draws, still got that respect. And I just don't think fans today understand that concept.
Well, it's the territory thing, you know, everything.
Yeah, right.
The fans for the last, you know, 30 years have been used to either WWE or WCW. And then when WCW fell, then all you had was WWE. And when you just have one company, it's never a good thing. You know, I was hoping that the territories would make a bigger return. Maybe it's just going to take a longer time. I'm a big fan of the NWA, what they're doing now. And, you know, would love to see them grow.
Yeah, there's some decent indies out there doing their thing, but it's a different flavor. And I'm not saying good or bad, because, you know, wrestling's always evolved. It is what it is. But it just has a different flavor to it. But going back to your career, early in your career, for a short time, you did team with Steve Austin. Could you see the potential in Steve? Because obviously we know what he became.
Yeah, well, Steve was as you have to do, eat, sleep, and drink wrestling, you know, and that's what we did. We used to watch as many wrestling tapes as we could get. We would watch together, you know.
And
we worked out together. Steve, you know, he paid his dues so much. He starved to death. At Lawler's territory, you know, there's his stories out there, but, you know, it's just a matter of how bad you want it.
Yeah. And I've heard you say that, because of Steve Austin's success with the shaved head, goatee, that look, it may have hindered you a little bit because
I always say, everybody goes, well, you know, how's going to be? I always thought you'd go further. I go, well, you had a Goldberg and you had a Steve Austin, you know.
Yeah.
I just happen to be the odd man out.
Yeah, it's one of those. You know, it's no matter how long you've been doing it, you could have had that shaved head goatee forever. But at that time period,
I was follically challenged anyway, so I was struggling.
Yeah, well, I guess bald head's a necessity sometimes, right? I mean, it's
the thing about it. I was in Germany. I was working for Otto Wann in '95, and Otto wanted to use Steve for the, you know, like their finale at the end of the tour.
Yeah.
And I called Steve, and Steve politely turned him down because he was going to Vince as a ringmaster at the time.
Yeah.
But I shaved my head and I had my Fu Manchu when I was in Germany, and I came back, and the first time I saw Steve on TV, I was like, wouldn't you know it?
Well, and you also wrestled in Global when it started up in Texas. Yes. And you teamed with John Tatum there as the California Connection. I talked to John a few episodes here on the show ago, and he's another guy that to me is very underappreciated in his talents and what he's done.
Absolutely. John helped me with the psychology of the business. You know, John was a book of knowledge. He knew how to read a crowd, how to, you know, find out what they're buying. And I picked that up from him, and working with John was just, it was pure joy, man. We worked hard, but we had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah. And a lot of people, when they think of Rod Price, they think of some of these teams, like with John Tatum. Does that ever bother? I mean, did you enjoy being a part of a team? Did you have a preference, or just whatever was needed?
pretty much whatever's needed. They pushed me for a long time to go into singles at Global. Mm-hmm. And, you know, John and I were really, and not blowing our own horns, but we were hot at the time, you know, and we had a lot of things going, and there was a lot of management decisions at Global that I didn't agree with, and they kept on pushing, and I kept on saying, well, if you pay me this much, I'll do it, and, you know, they'd haul me around and then come back 2 months later and hit me up again, and I raised my price, and that would shut them up for a while. Then finally one day they said okay. So
I guess there's worse problems to have.
Well, yeah, but I really enjoyed it. I loved doing the tag team, and I kid around with just joking around with John and Jack Victory. I said, if we would have been around, they wouldn't even known the Freebirds.
yeah. I mean, that's kind of a weird era of wrestling, right? Because you had all these kind of these upstarts that were everybody thought was going to be the next big thing, right? You know, the Globals, the UWF, the AWF, right. All these pop-ups with, I don't know, these whatever guys that had funding, I guess. And, they run hot for a little bit and then fade away. And it seemed like each one of them, though, you'd see kind of the same names, right? The John Tatums, the Rod, all these guys working these.
Well, it was like a fixture.
Yeah.
The Sportatorium, I worked Max Andrews. Well, I worked for Fritz. I worked for a Lawler. I worked for Pedicino. I worked for Max mm-hmm. Andrews. I worked for Gray Pearson. And then when Global died, a couple other guys came in, and, you know, they wanted to have the Sportatorium. You know, it's just, I worked for Crockett when he tried to run.
Tried to run there.
You know? And the only thing with Crockett, he tried to turn the clock back to, you know, 1960. He cut out the music, no intro music, just dead. And, you know, it was a fresh start, and people were like scratching their head what was going on. And it just, I knew then it was going to die a quick death, quick death.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the Crockett thing was so peculiar at that time because everybody was talking about it, right? Because everybody thought, oh, you know, Crockett's coming back. Here it goes, right? There was all these talks of, you know, Paul Heyman being associated, and, but it was like they did the taping and then nothing happened. It was so odd.
I think it was very poorly thought out. I think Crockett came in thinking because he had the name that, you know, he could hang a poster and he was going to sell off the Sportatorium. But times had changed, especially the Sportatorium had been through so many promotions that, you know, the fans were, you had a hardcore base fan or fan base from world class that kept all those promotions going. You had that core fan base that just kept coming because they loved Dallas wrestling. And finally, you know, it just got to the point where they were getting burned out with all the promotions, with all the failures, man. It was like,
yeah.
There was another promotion that came in, and I was just like, I was already looking, I was going to Europe, but I was also talking to ECW. So,
yeah,
I was ready. I loved Dallas, I loved the Sportatorium, but I was ready to get out.
And that happened. A little of it started falling on there for a little bit on Kevin, right? Kevin Tipp.
Kevin, you know, came in too, right?
Yeah, he kept trying to. But, you know, if anybody, to me, if anybody had the right to try, right? He was, you know, because if you have that Von Erich name tie, you got probably a better shot than most. It's like some people just thought the building alone was going to just draw, right? If you're running the Sportatorium, you're going to get
Absolutely. And I think Kevin, if he would have came in after Jarrett pulled out.
Yeah, yeah.
and redid, you know, I don't know, you know, with a name brand, if it could have gone back to World Class, but if he would have started that up again, that would have been the perfect time.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And but speaking of when you worked in Texas, I know you've probably told this story a million times, but I got to ask you about the Chris Adams story and the infamous match.
And, absolutely.
Some of the listeners may not have ever heard of this, but you talked about being follically challenged, and you kind of had a, what do they call it, a hair weave? I don't know what the technical term is. Yeah,
absolutely.
And
it was a serious one, man, because I put a lot of thought in it. It was like, you know, I don't want this thing to get pulled out. You know, I don't want to have to go through all that. So,
and I imagine at that time it wasn't cheap.
And, man.
Yeah.
It was $600 a month for those rugs.
Yeah. And apparently there was, right, there was the blanket statement, hey, the boys weren't supposed to mess with it. Everybody kind of knew. I mean,
and everybody knew. Everybody was cool with it. I never had a problem with it until that night.
Till Chris. But and everybody's heard, especially recently with some of the shows that have been out there, everybody's heard the Chris Adams story. And I always loved Chris Adams. I was always a fan. Such a talent. But obviously, he had issues.
I like Chris Adams. Always, you know, sober, he was a great guy.
Yeah. So what? Obviously, that night, he yanked the wave so hard, it pulled it off. You bled profusely. What?
I had 219 stitches put in my head.
So what?
I went to Parkland Hospital. They had to call in a neurosurgeon. And, I mean, I was so covered in blood that my friends went down to check on me, and they walked right past me because they didn't recognize me. They thought I was a corpse.
So what do you think? What was the deal there? Was he drunk? Was he inebriated? Was he on something? Did you guys have heat? Is it what? Or was it just him trying to be an ass? Or what was the deal?
I think that was part of it. I think it was a lot of ongoing. We had worked so much together. We worked with, you know, we did angles with Jeannie, with Tony. We just worked so much, and we both worked tight. We were snug.
Yeah.
And we worked all over, you know, not only in Texas, Oklahoma, Mississippi. We went out, we did that angle because Chris had his own promotion too. So he built off the TV and did his own promotion. And, you know, we had some rough matches, you know. I bloodied him up a few times. And, you know, and just mainly receipts, but I'm sure I potatoed him a few times. You know, I'm not the innocent one, but that night, I don't know. I guess it just built up over time.
Was there ever an opportunity? Did you guys ever talk about it after? Did he ever apologize? Was there anything said between you two after the fact?
Oh, I still had a lot of heat. I'm not proud of it now, and I hate to talk bad about the dead, but about 2 or 3 weeks after the incident, we were doing a show in Oklahoma, and I just felt I needed to give him a receipt, and I put him into the turnbuckle sideways and broke three of his ribs. And yes, I did it on purpose.
Well, you know, I mean, it's hard to, when it gets to that level, right? It's hard. I mean, we've heard story after story in wrestling of those things happening. I mean, you know, if it going one step too far, and it's hard to separate sometimes those emotions from what's happening.
You know, temper happens, you know, loss.
Yeah.
Wasn't clear thinking to begin with, and had my opportunity, and I took it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and as you mentioned earlier, right, Dallas, you know, eventually transitioned kind of over to Jarrett for a while. And I think around that time you kind of went to Japan for some tours. But I've heard that you had, I don't know if it was around this time, but somewhere in this vicinity, you had an offer from WCW that you passed on. Is that true? What happened there?
It was, I turned around twice. One time because had a really good deal in Japan, and you know, they said, well, if you come here, won't be able to go there. And I really liked, I liked more than anything was freedom. I didn't like everybody I talked to that worked for, mainly I wanted to work for Vince, but the more I talked with people that worked for Vince, they were miserable. You know, they were making money, but they were just miserable. And that wasn't my, that's not how I like to live my life. I don't like to be controlled. You know, at the time, I just, money, of course, is important. And yes, I left a lot of money on the table, but I just didn't feel it was right for me. The second time, Sid Vicious was there, and he called me, Booker T, and Stevie Ray in the office, and wanted to sign us to WCW. And I got back from Europe. I was working, doing house shows for Vince. I was getting teased, getting screwed, but getting teased that might get on with them.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to screw that up, and you know.
Yeah.
Bad decisions. But
yeah. Well, but the 90s were also a weird era at WCW. With, I mean, so many leadership transitions, and who it was a whole weird period.
Yeah, I think if I'd gone, because you know they had such an influx of WWF talent that I would have got lost in the shuffle. I mean,
yeah,
Steve was there just being brilliant, and you know they jobbed him out.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
you know, and I just in my mind, it just at the time again, I just didn't think it was going to be the right decision.
Yeah, and as you mentioned earlier, you did work for USWA and Jarrett Lawler some, but but you said in the past that it was not a good experience for you. Why is that? What was? Yeah, I've heard some stories. You know, some people either love Memphis or hate Memphis, and I think it depends on which side of the money you fall on.
Yeah, no, the money for me was all right. You know, okay.
Yeah,
and I didn't mind the territory. I didn't mind the travel. It just, after you've been there for, you know, 6-8 months, you start looking about, well, where am I going from here?
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, you know, I was blessed. I got to go to Japan. They always tagged on 2 weeks in Korea with me. And I traveled, you know, I like going overseas. So, because there was, you just go there, you work hard, and you go home. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. You get paid. And that was me. That's what I like to do. You know, of course, I like to have fun. But, you know, when it came to business is business. And I like to work hard, like to wrestle. And when I'm done, pay me and let me go home.
Yeah. And in 98-99, you wrestled for ECW as a member of DeBaldi's. So what was your experience like there in ECW during that time?
I had a great time. Paul, there, you know, there at the end, Paul just had me watching the monitor. You know, I just tried to get those guys over because I saw the stardom, you know, these guys are going to be the next stars. And I was winding down my career. Injuries were catching up to me. And I knew, you know, I knew this may be it. So I just went out and did anything I could do to help that promotion and get those guys over. And, you know, I just tried to put together matches or suggest things that they might want to try. You know, the crowd seen this, they seen that, you might want to do this, and watch the monitor, man. And a lot of guys came up and, you know, felt enough respect to ask me, you know, what did you think, or what do I need to do? And, you know, I was grateful and thankful for at that time that I had that respect from him.
Yeah, and Paul was very good about that, right? He was very good at finding guys to fill needs, to fill slots, and was very good at taking guys that wouldn't have probably been stars or caught on anywhere, finding the right gimmick, hiding their flaws or whatever it might be, and right. making something out of them. He could see the potential in people and see kind of those pieces of the puzzle on where they could be to help the company.
Yeah, he had the vision, and he helped so many guys, and a lot of guys that came out of ECW went on WWE to become huge stars, man. And
yeah.
It was, my personal feeling, it was all because of Paul Heyman had the vision.
Yeah, I've always been a huge ECW fan, and I think people always talk about blood and guts and this, and it was so much more than just the hardcore stuff. I know that's what people key on, but there was a lot more to it than that. And it to me, ECW felt like the last big territory, and that it kind of got bigger than it could handle, and that was kind of what happened. So did you ever have any of the pay issues with Paul that so many people always talk about there at the end?
I didn't. And I always tell this is my secret. I opened an account with Ace Cash, or check cashing service.
Yeah.
And they probably got a stack a mile high of unpaid checks. But I was, when I got home, I used to run straight there. I knew the guy. It's a funny story. He said, man, because Paul's checks were just had a name, no number, no address, nothing. And I called the office, and Tommy Dreamo backed me up on this. Hardly anybody is ever there in the office.
Yeah.
And just that day, the Lord was with me. Guido was there, and he picked up, and I said, all you got to do is say yes. And he's like, what? I said, just say yes. Just say yes, Guido. And I handed the phone to the guy, and he said yes. And that's all it took. I was good to go from there.
Well, you heard so many guys tell, right? They pick their checks up and race to the bank to be who can be first there, because sometimes there's always so much money, and you're the first guys there.
Absolutely. The and the local guy, you know, we flew in. Local guy right, said, yeah. He's in.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm glad, you know, you hear some of the horror stories of some of the guys that were open. And I'm not trying to diss Paul Heyman. It was, you know, he ended up filing bankruptcy. He took a hit on it too. No matter what anybody says, he took a financial hit as well. I mean,
right. And
I get it, right? He was doing what he had to do. But I mean, you hear, you know, guys that are owed money and whatever. But well, I'm glad to see it didn't impact you then. That's funny.
I'm probably one of the only guys that can tell a positive story about Paul Heyman's checks.
That's such a wrestling story, though, isn't it? How to work.
Absolutely.
that's just like part of the business there. You gotta, all right, how can I, like, I can't remember the story. Who was it that won a battle royal with one of those big ass checks and went to the bank and cashed it? Got him to cash it. I'm like, that's such a pro wrestling story.
Absolutely. You gotta love it, man.
Yeah. That's part of the appeal. And you mentioned earlier that with ECW, you know, your injuries were catching up and everything else. Is that so? I'm assuming that's what led to you kind of slowing down your appearances, your in-ring schedule. Is that wear and tear? I mean, you've been doing it for a while there, and things just catch up.
Yeah, I was kind of at the point where, you know, when ECW, they started with TNT and that kind of. Mm-hmm. Or I think it's TNT. When they started.
Oh, no,
they
no, started no. What was it? It was the Nashville Network, whatever that is.
Yeah.
TNN. There you go.
TNN. And Tuesday Night Titans, still in my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. That and Rollerball.
Yeah. But I just kind of, you know, again, the Lord gave me enough vision to say, all right, this, you know, what are you going to do next?
Yeah.
You know, you're getting older. You're and what you're going to have to, you know, you have no insurance, what you're going to do.
Yeah.
So, you know, working some. And that's what I did during high school and my first 2 years of college. I worked for a plumbing company and yeah. Really enjoyed it, really liked it. When I decided, hey, that's what I'm going to do, I said, well, I don't want to work for, you know, Joe Schmo Plumbing. I knew I needed some training, and I joined the union and finished my finished the apprenticeship and made good money. The union in the South is not as strong as it is in the North, so it's right to work state, that kind of thing. So it was going to be a lot of travel. You were getting double pay, but you were still away from home, and you were, you know, on the road for 6-8 months a year.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, you know, I've been there, done that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I found a local mechanical company that I worked for, and I worked for them for almost 15 years and really enjoyed it. Had good health benefits, got a lot of surgeries. The owner of the company was just awesome to me and worked with me, worked through all my surgeries. He was great, man.
Yeah, that almost has to feel like retirement for a guy that's been on the road and traveling so much and all over the place, just to settle down. Even though you're still working and working a full time schedule, it almost had to feel like settling down and retiring a little bit, because it had to be a lot calmer.
It was good. It was, you know, it was nice to finally be in your own bed every night. I still worked independent shows.
Yeah,
about. Right. Three or four nights a week for up till I was 52. Yeah. In between, I, you know, the only time I took off was when I was getting rebuilt, repaired.
Yeah, well, I worked
a lot with, you know, Rodney Bigno and Jazz were a big part of my life, and I helped them get into the business, and.
Yeah.
I used to take Rodney to get his foot in the door in some of these promotions. You know, I would call the promoter and say, hey, look, I'm coming in. I'm working a tag team. I'm bringing my guy with me and book us.
Yeah.
And I did that with Rodney. We traveled a lot doing sometimes it was on a Saturday night. It was a 9-hour drive to Fort Worth. Do the show, 9-hour drive home, and I went, you know, I had a few hours to rest on Sunday and went back to work on Monday. But I wanted to help Rodney get in, get his foot in the door, and he did, and he just, you know, him, and that was in the beginning, and later he went on to WWE. He, you know, of course, Jazz's career was fantastic, and
yeah.
They're still wonderful friends to this day.
Yeah, and I think they're both still out there doing. I think they're both still with the NWA, and I think Jazz works a lot behind the scenes, and I think Rodney still wrestles, and yeah. still very active and out there. Great talents, right? You know, great guys and everything, and I don't know how much you want to talk about it, and if you don't, that's okay. But I know you've talked, and some of your mind communicate. You've had some issues lately, right? Did you lose your home in Katrina?
I lost my home in Katrina, and I lost my home in Ida.
Twice?
Yeah, you know, like Gary Hart told me. He said, Rod, I've been in 3 plane crashes. We were flying together. Right. What's the odds?
You got to feel safe riding with him, right? Because what's the odds it's going to happen again?
Exactly. Exactly. But my wife and I, we lost our home in Ida. Went through it was, you know, it's not only us, it was our whole community.
Sure. Just, yeah, right, of course.
Just had a rough time. And, you know, we didn't know where we were going to live. We didn't know what we were going to do. We lived in a FEMA trailer for almost 3 years, and we were thankful to have it. Believe
sure.
me.
Sure. Yeah.
And then the Lord opened the door with this program through the government. They actually did something right. It's okay. called Restore. Uh-huh. And they built us a brand new home. We're, because of the area we're in, we're 19 foot in the air, but we have an elevator. But, yeah. you know, well, the Lord just blessed us to well, open, get, you know, gave us a brand new home. What we lost, we've gotten back tenfold.
Sure. Yeah. So it just, I mean, I have a curious question. When you talk about stuff, you, I mean, it might be a touchy subject, but how much did you lose memorabilia from your career and different things like that, keepsakes?
Oh, Katrina wiped out my collection.
Oh man, that's
from football to wrestling, and then I think we lost, my wife and I lost more material, you know, stuff.
Yeah.
The wind picked up our house. We were already 5 foot in the air. The wind, my wife thinks it was a tornado, picked up the house and dropped it. And the pilings went through the floor, ripped the roof off. So, you know, all our furniture, all our clothes, you know, stuff.
Yeah.
We lost. And we tried to salvage, and we probably could have got more, and we should have got more out of the house. But I think at the time, I know my wife was just devastated, and yeah. and it was such a shock. You were going through so many things. We didn't have power or electricity, running water for almost 3 weeks, 4 weeks. My wife and I took living in her mom's house, which lost his roof. FEMA mm-hmm. came and put a temporary roof on it, but no power. We had a generator. My loving son, Logan Price, mm-hmm. wrestled, and uh-huh. he sent me some money where I was able to buy two generators, and that really saved us. That really saved us. We had a little air conditioner, but we were taking our showers with two bottles of water.
Oh, man. Yeah. But like you said, right, things appear to be on the upswing, sailing back down to some normalcy, right? You're settling
absolutely.
Into a new home. So
absolutely, man. We're all good.
There you go.
We look back and laugh now.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, you know, it's rough doing it, but someday, hopefully, yeah, you come through it. And
it just wasn't us, you know, there were so many people affected, so.
Yeah, and I was going to, you mentioned Logan, I was going to ask you about Logan. He was a wrestler. Does he still wrestle?
Yeah, he's still. Yeah,
I thought so.
He still gets out there. He focuses on a job.
Yeah.
He's got a new fiance, and he's in love, so I don't hear too much from him. But she's a sweet, looks like a very sweet girl, and they got engaged, so I'm just so happy for him. He's doing well.
Well, he's a big badass looking dude,
and
pretty gnarly looking. So what did you think about him pursuing the business? Obviously it's a different time than when you tried to break through. Right. Again, but I have to imagine there's a mix of emotions for you. It's like on one hand, you know, there's a pride in wanting to do what you did. On the other hand, there's a come on, kid, why are you going to this?
Yeah, it was bittersweet for sure. Yeah. But you know, I was with my son and with my grandkids. You know, I live my life, and I respect whatever they want to do. So when he said, when he said that's what he wants to do, I said, all right, you know, if you're going to be committed, then you're going to be committed. You know, if you're going to, if you want me to train you, I'll train you, but you got to be committed. Yeah. And he was. He just ran into, he moved from Atlanta, was trying to live in New Orleans and work in New Orleans. And he was, at the time, I was living in Lafayette. And he was traveling 2 hours to Lafayette, you know, three times a week. And he wasn't in the best shape of his life. And after one practice, I pulled him in. I said, look, I don't know what you're doing, but, you're not going to make it if you keep doing it.
Yeah.
And he quit doing whatever he was doing and got focused and worked hard. And then financially, he had to move back to Atlanta, but he got in with the power plant, WCW. And Sarge was like, I know your dad, and I'm gonna make it harder on you than anybody else.
I've seen some recent pictures. He looks good. And I've seen some of his posts online. He seems to be very respectful and very. There's obviously a lot of love for you and what you did before him. I've seen post several things, you know, paying some great tribute to you, like on your birthday and different things and admiring what you did to let him do what he does. And so that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I'm a proud papa. I can tell you that.
Yeah. 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 That's all we can hope. Right.
That's it. Yep.
Yeah. So, let's wrap this up. Do you ever get out there and do convention appearances and things like that still? Or
I just started. I'm leaving tomorrow to go to North Carolina for the.
Yeah, gathering. I thought you're doing the gathering in Charlotte, and by the time this hits, that'll be over. But I'm pretty sure I thought I saw you on the site, and I know they're doing a big thing on World Class, and I think you're probably a part of that.
Yes,
several guys there. Well, I
mean, Martin Martin had called me last year and wanted me to go, but I think I was just getting ready to have back surgery. So I was like, man, I'm not traveling well. I can't do it. And he said, totally understand.
Yeah. So, I mean, you'll see a lot of these. We talked about John Tatum. He's going to be there. I think Jack Vickers is going to be there.
Yeah.
Missy Hyatt.
Yeah,
all these.
Wild Bill Irwin.
Yeah. Wild Bill is. I know Kevin Von Erich is going to be there. I mean, it's probably been a while since you've seen some of these guys, right?
Last time I saw him was for Black Bart's benefit show in Texas. I saw Iceman. I get to see Ice again.
Oh, yeah. Iceman's going to be there. Yep. I saw that too. Yeah. And man, I always loved Iceman. Man, I was what a talker.
Brian Adidas is going to be there.
Yep. So yep.
Yeah. I'm excited, man.
Yeah. Yeah, should be fun. Like I said, by the time this episode's released, the event will already be over. So hopefully, some of my listeners got to go out and see you and some of those guys and catch the pictures and pay their respects. So it sounds like a good time. Again, there's you know lots of those conventions out there. It's pretty cool that you guys get to after all you've done get to go out there and just meet the fans and
it's just kind of. Icing on the cake for me. I'm helping out with promotions. I work with James Beard on a couple of promotions in Louisiana and Texas, help out with that.
Yeah.
And eventually I'm going to weasel my way in with NWA. I've got a kid down here. He's my nephew. I've been taking him to different promotions, getting him going. So.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Is he working yet, or is he just getting
started? Yeah, he's 21. He's been working for 3 years now.
Yeah. Well, what's his work name?
He wasn't going by the devil. Now he goes by Ashton. Oh, I can't remember. He just changed his gimmick. So.
Well.
Anyway, his name.
Keep an eye. we'll keep an eye. And
Ashton. I'll plug him as Ash. Good kid. Love him to death.
There you go. Well, NWA is a good place to utilize a guy like you, right? They're always looking for those producers, guys behind the scenes to give that wisdom. They got a lot of good young talent that that could, you know, that carry that melding that the old school, the tradition, and the new, and you know, and they utilize, you know, like Jazz, and she works behind the scenes as a producer, and and some of these guys.
I'm so proud of her. She got in. I know Rodney's in there. James Beard is in there. He's also working with another promotion out there that's just got fantastic facilities there in Dallas or in East Texas, man. It's awesome. I can't wait to be a part of that too.
Yeah. James is a good guy. I talked to him not too long ago. He's a great guy.
Man.
Yeah.
James has been my big brother for a long time.
Yeah. Oh, and he just what a guy. Just helps so many people. I mean, he's done so much, but he's so giving, right? He's always helping and passing it, you know, paying it forward. So before we close out, being, you know, a bit of a fixture in Texas wrestling, did you see the Iron Claw movie?
Absolutely.
Yeah. What'd you think of it?
I thought for a Hollywood production, I thought it was pretty good. You know, they always take liberties, but but you know, if you keep in mind, it's a movie. The biggest I always tell my wife, you know, the biggest lie is based on a true story.
Sure. Yeah. Well, it's the thing. But me and my wife watched it together. And she loved it, right? She thought, "Oh, that's a great movie, great story." And I'm like, "Yeah, but the real timeline's even better." And I'm like, "I don't know why they did some of that." And I'm like, "She's like, don't nitpick this."
I heard a lot of reviews, and you know, I was just like, "I don't want to pick it apart."
I mean, either
I was there for some of it, and I don't want to, you know. I don't want to say, "Oh, that didn't happen."
Yeah.
It's like watching a, you know, a Marvel comic movie.
Sure.
You know, it's not real, but enjoy the movie.
Yeah. My take is, you know what? I've got my opinions. I've got my problems because right now I'm a stickler on history and dates. And
right.
So I've got my issues, but I'm so happy that the general public in Hollywood are at least paying some attention to professional wrestling and they deserve it. So I'm like, you know what? I'll take the win. I'll take that as a win.
So every day,
you know, it could be worse. So there could be no movie and, you know, but, so, all right, well, Rod, thank you. I know we've been, you know, trying to, like I said, you've gone through a lot. We've been trying to nail this down for a while. No. No need to apologize.
We got it done, man.
Yeah. And I'm very happy to talk to you. And, hopefully, you know, down the road, we can do a part two and dive deeper, maybe on something more specific. And, who knows, down the road, maybe I'll be interviewing your nephew. Maybe he'll stick and hit. And I
sure hope so. That would be awesome.
Yeah. And, I'm pushing now. Hopefully, I want to see some Rod Price involvement in NWA. So if I don't, so if anybody out there knows Billy Corgan, put in a good word. And
absolutely. Help me.
Yeah.
Put me to work.
Hey everybody, Gene Jackson here, inviting you to check out the Retro Wrestling Review, where each week I'm joined by some great co-hosts who help me review classic episodes of USWA Championship Wrestling, and right now we are doing week-by-week reviews of 1993. But we don't just do reviews, sometimes we get a chance to interview some of the people who were there and lived it, plus do watch-alongs. It's a lot of fun, so check out new episodes that drop every Wednesday at WrestleCopia.com. And to find links to everything associated to the podcast, you can go to uswapodcast.com.
All right, and welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. I am Dave Dynasty. That was Rod Price. Thank you to Rod for coming on. Hey, Billy Corgan, NWA, hire Rod Price. Give him a job. As he said, put him to work. Let him bring his knowledge, his experience, and everything else to that. You know, I enjoy the NWA. But here lately, their product is just—it's just not it for me, right? I'm just—it's lacking. There's a few little things there I like, a few bright spots. Overall, it's just not my thing. And when they first came back, I was really, really into it. And I don't know—it's lost some of its luster for me. I don't feel that the direction is the way I like. So bringing some guys in like Rod Price or whatever behind the scenes, some guys that have. Some minds that are fresh in those roles, right? That have not, they've got a lot of experience, a lot to bring to the table,
but that haven't been in some of those backstage creative type roles, it might be something, right? Let's bring in some new minds, some new approaches, and let's see what happens. So, but anyway, thank you to Rod for coming on and doing that interview with me. May have Rod back on in the future. I'd like to dive a little deeper, maybe into some of the world-class stuff and different things. Rod is a good guy, and I appreciate his time. Guys, make sure you follow me on X. I'm there at The Dave Dynasty. That is the best way to follow me on social media so that you see everything I post, all the new, any updates or anything about the podcast, all my historical posts, newspaper articles, pictures, etc. That is probably the best central location to find me is on X. Also, make sure you go check out all of the other WrestleCopia podcasts. The shows are all fun. They're great listens. I subscribe and listen. I'm in. I'm part of the family. I know our show is part of the WrestleCopia network, but I am first and foremost a fan, and I listen to all these shows and really, really enjoy them. I learn lots from them. The passion, the energy is enthusiastic, and it's contagious, right? And so go check them out. You can find them at WrestleCopia.com, or you can look up the shows individually by name. And also be sure to go check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. There is lots of great classic videos and TV episodes, events, documentaries, all kinds of cool stuff on there. There's lots of good WWA stuff on there for my fellow Midwest freaks. So go check them out. You can find them at classicwrestling.net, or you can download the Ultimate Classic Wrestling app on all of your devices. Next episode, my guest, this is going to be a wild one, boys. Boys and girls, excuse me. I'm sorry. Didn't mean to exclude. My guest next episode will be Jamie Dundee, Mr. JC Ice himself. And, you know, JC, you know, Jamie doesn't hold back, right? He says what he wants, has his opinions. Nothing flies off the handle too much, but Jamie does give his opinions, talks about his career, talks about his father, talks about Memphis, talks about Jerry Springer, talks about his arrests, and much, much more. Jamie's not afraid to talk, not afraid to tell stories, not afraid to chat it up, and I like that, right? I'm a conversational interviewer, and Jamie is good at that as well. So we had a great interview, and I look forward to you hearing that on the next episode. Thank you, everyone, for all your listens, your supports, your follows, your interactions. The show has been thriving. We have been growing, and we're really, it's, I don't know, it's, I feel like we've hit a bright spot here. Hit a hot spot in the time, right? We're really, for whatever reason, got a lot of attention on ours. The listens have been rising, getting lots of interaction on social media, lots of people retweeting and responding, lots of just great feedback of people just popping up how much they enjoyed my interviews and everything else. And I appreciate that. And I really attribute a lot of that to you guys, your support, your shares, your listens. Lots of you have been with me for a long, long time. I've been doing this podcast for damn near 8 years. And I am probably more passionate and enjoy it more now than I did at any point in this time, you know, time period of doing it. And it's because of you guys, right? You keep it fun. You keep it relevant for me. You keep it energetic. I got lots of great people that I get to talk to. And I've got some great guests coming up, guys. I mean, some really, really great guests. I've got one interview on the books scheduled. And you know me, if you've listened to me for a while, if you've listened to me for any duration of that 8 years, you know I'm a little superstitious and I don't like announcing interviews and guests until I've got that interview in the bag, because I'm a little superstitious that if I put it out there and announce it and try to promote it at all, I'm going to jinx it, right? And it's hard enough sometimes with interviews and schedules and getting these things, you know, to jive and to happen. So I'm not about to rock any boats. I'm not a very superstitious guy overall, but for whatever reason, that's one thing. I don't announce until the interview's in the can. But this is, I have an interview schedule that is a bucket list for me. I mean, this is literally a top five, probably a top five guy, easily. And I know I've said this about a few guys, but this is someone I'm a huge fan of. And I cannot wait to chat with him. I cannot wait to once it's completed and so I could throw it out there and announce to you guys, it's going to be fun. And I really think it's going to be a good conversation. It's someone I spoke with a little bit on the phone. We jived, we jailed. I think it's going to be great, and I can't wait to do it. But anyway, I've got lots of great guests coming up. Lots of great interviews already in the bag. Lots of more great scheduled. Lots more people that I have fillers out for that have interest. Guys, there's some good stuff coming. So make sure you subscribe so that you do not miss an episode. Just subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Hit that auto download. And that way, every Wednesday morning, that podcast, that interview is there waiting for you in your podcast platform. Guys, thank you once again. And again, next week, join us as I interview Jamie Dundee. But until then, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we've brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Menaker thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.